It's complicated.
Is it true that Iceland is green and Greenland is covered with ice?
Being Lebanese chef or being Arab chefs or being local chefs,
I couldn't believe the Lebanese influence there. Then I find out Toronto is also
done. I'm not having fish and chips anymore.
Take me with you next time.
Welcome to a new episode of Food Unscripted. In the previous shows, we had an enjoyable talk about Dubai and others about Hani and the introduction of who we are and what we do. It's Food Unscripted, nothing prepared, never. We don't even discuss the show before, and everything goes live the way it is. 38 minutes, 3 for my number, 8 for his, and 38, we stop and we continue on another show. You can feel free to ask any question you want in the comments below. And here we are discussing today food destinations.
Yeah, this is a subject very, very dear to me. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, writing about it, traveling to learn more about it. Basically, the question is, what determines a city or a region to be called a culinary destination or a foodie city? What is the criteria?
It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's definitely complicated. And that question is the egg or the chicken before is does food do people or people do food? Does food do a country or country do food? And wow, it's complicated.
It's very complicated. Very complicated. I started thinking about it a lot. And I divided it into two reasons or things that can identify a city as a culinary city. One is cities that you go to. When I say city, it can be a region or a country that you go to for a specific cuisine or a specific type of food. The easiest example is to use for that is Italy. Mm-hmm. You go to Italy and people go to Italy for food all the time, but you're going there for Italian food. You're gonna go there to eat your pasta, you're gonna go there to have all the regional Italian foods. You're not gonna go to Italy because they have great Indian food or great Chinese food. I'm sure they do, but it's not the reason why Italy is called a culinary destination. The other side of that coin is cities or regions that have multiple cuisines, multiple reasons, like in the previous episode we discussed Dubai. Dubai is probably the best example of that. It's a melting pot. It's 180 nationalities, each one having their own kitchen. So you're either this one or that one. And if you're neither, if you're not, no, listen, not everybody can have good food. Not everybody's famous for having good food, right? So you're not gonna be a culinary destination. Not every city can be a culinary destination.
So let's take a step back and start from the beginning and explain exactly what we mean by that.
Yeah.
It starts by the country. So one, the country is the country on an international location that has good food. Let's start by the countries that have good food,
yes,
and not have become current destinations. So I'll give an example just for the sake of an example, Lebanon or Italy on the Mediterranean Sea, which are countries that have food, that have people who love food, that have produce, that have been known for good food. So it's not food that has been imported, it's not food that is only for a necessity. I don't want to seem negative and give examples that would be badly or wrongly interpreted, but let's talk about food in Saudi Arabia before the expats brought some different kinds of food. There are only 5, 10, 15 that are all based around milk and fat and dates and everything that is good for the person to be able to live in a heat environment. I can give the example of Armenia, which has couple few dishes that are pork related, very fat related, that less freshness, less tomatoes, less colors, because in the country, it's a country that where temperature goes down to minus 40 and definitely they do not have a sea. So you need to take first the country as is and say, does it have a sea? It adds value. Does it have mountains? It definitely adds value. Do they have good vegetables? It adds value. Do they have four seasons, 60 to 70 to probably 100 days of rain during the day? And all of these play a good role when we want to talk about destinations that have created their own food.
Yep.
So Middle Eastern food, Lebanese food, Italian food, Indian food, Chinese food, etc., etc. So this is the category of food destinations, countries that have good food. So these foods are being taken out of their origin and being used in countries like New York, like Japan, like Dubai, like Riyadh or Saudi Arabia, where you can go and explore all the foods of the world, like LA, etc. Yeah. So, and then back to people who came in and brought their culture with them. So a melting pot of cultures, as we said, 180 destination nationalities. So every nationality brought with them their habits and good food, and they have settled in New York. So this is why New York is a food destination. You won't go to New York to eat American food. You would, but that's not the point. You would eat cuisines of the world. You would go to Dubai to eat cuisines of the world, and not Emirati food. Yes. You would, but that's not the point, and so on and so forth. So we categorize them into two big categories. Countries who have good food of their own.
Yes.
And countries who give you an exploration of everything.
Yes. A rich culinary history. Very deep, very old. Example, Turkish, Iranian. These are cuisines that are thousands of years old. So you either have that or you have the imported cultures that come in, the melting pots of the world. You mentioned Saudi. I have to kind of say something here. Where I'm from, Jeddah and Mecca region, Hijaz, it's basically a melting pot of different Muslim nationalities that have been coming once a year to do Hajj, but in the old days, many never left. Mm-hmm. So we don't market ourselves properly, but you can go into some local restaurants there and you'll have Bukhari food, Uzbek food, even Chinese influenced food, Indonesian food, and for us that kind of became like Saudi food. But we don't market it properly, but it's there. But generally speaking, if you say Emirati food or Saudi food or Gulf food, it's fish and rice or lamb and rice, generally speaking.
What's your favorite food destination, if you have to choose one, and why?
Okay, if I had to choose one, it would be Japan. And if I had to choose one city, it would be Tokyo. The reason, it's very hard to describe, and it's much better to experience. But they have, you can go there and have arguably the best pizza in the world, the best pasta you've ever had, incredible Chinese food, incredible, obviously, Japanese food. It's a city where you have desserts. They have entire shopping malls that make candy and sweets and desserts and this, noodles. There's a philosophy in Japanese culture. It's called shokunin. Shokunin is someone who masters their art or their trade. It doesn't have to apply only about food. It can be the shokunin of making samurais. This person has been doing the samurai daily for the past 30 years. And the goal of a shokunin is to master your art, to be the best at what you do. There's one that makes tomatoes. There's one that makes the melons. And the most famous melons, you know, those melons that cost a few hundred dollars each. They will actually pick the melons and leave one only on the vine so that it gets all the nutrients. That's why you end up having the most delicious ingredients. Or there's the Wagyu shokunin, guys who make the one dish or the one type of food, grilled meats. That's all they do, but they master it and perfect it. That's why I love Japan. That's why if you ask any chef their favorite place, most of the time they'll say it's Japan because of that.
So Japan teaches you perfection.
Perfection. It teaches you specialization also. You know, there's a guy who makes this knife, and you go there and you see them, and his father was doing it, and his grandfather was doing it. There are restaurants in Japan that are in the same family hundreds of years, or hotels, 1,000-year-old hotel. It's the same family that still owns the hotel. There's one place I went to called Obana. Obana makes the sea eel. Okay, it's the same. It's a 200-year-old restaurant. That's all they do is the eel. They make two or three dishes. There's a lot of that in Japan.
Have you ever been to Australia?
I have. I've been to Australia because I used to live in Indonesia.
Okay.
And it's so close. And my best friend at the time was Australian. Invited me to Melbourne. And the first time I went to Melbourne, my expectation of Australia was beer, outback, snakes, things like that. To my surprise, I found that they have the most incredible food. They have hospitality is in their blood, you know? Like in Lebanese, they have the hospitality. It's part of that. They have that in Australia. They'll serve you the most incredible Greek food, even Lebanese, Italian food. And it's there's La Nonna is in the back making it. I know you've been a few times, and you had also a very good experience, right?
So Australia shocked me exactly. So yeah. I thought I'm going to go, like I see it in the movies, see big snakes and big flying mosquitoes and whatsoever. And then you discover a country where produce is king. Yes. And they have the best of everything. They do master the art of meat. They do master the art of vegetables. So you have the produce, and you can choose anything you want. You want to do Lebanese parsley, you can plant it. You want to have Lebanese cucumbers, you can plant it. So you don't have to import anything. And considering it's a far country, so a 15-hour flight from Dubai, you wouldn't have to import anything. So they do export to the world. There is that question that usually I ask is, do you know why meat in Australia is famous or world famous? Because they are the biggest exporters, and because Americans don't have time to export. So their culture into developing that Wagyu and that MB
culture. Australian Wagyu, absolutely.
It's Australian all the way. Yep. And whenever you eat meat in Australia, I would say, okay, wait, stop. Why are restaurants good, and why is the scene good? Because you'll be shocked how many French you will meet, how many Italians you will meet. And you would say, what brought you here all the way from the rest of the world? What brought Lebanese here, etc.? So when you look at Australia, probably us living in the center of the world would say, what would take me there more than being a tourist? No, people are going and loving the life there.
Yes.
Imagine Australia is one of the biggest countries in the world, closely or bigger than the States. In all of Australia, there are only 27 million people living.
Incredible.
In the States,
there's more people in Tokyo than in Australia.
Yeah. In the States, there are 320 million. Yeah. So these 27 million live in peace, eat great food, have produce of their own other than the ones they export. They get the best and export the rest, and not vice versa. So I was impressed by Sydney even more than Melbourne. Many say Melbourne is your food destination. I believe Sydney is more, considering I compare it to Dubai and the competition there is, less competition in Melbourne, more of a hidden communities. You would have the Chinese, the Lebanese, the Syrian, etc. But Sydney in downtown, they call the city, they call it CBD.
Central CBD. Business District.
Exactly. So yep. For us, CBD is something not allowed to to smoke anyway. Yep. So CBD has a competition that is phenomenal. Yep. Lots of English, lots of French, lots of everything. And they do create concepts. I learned a lot from the city. I learned a lot from Australia. So the answer would be, is it my favorite food destination? Not that much. I love it, but it won't be the one. You'll be impressed by my choice. My choice would be Iceland.
Iceland?
Reykjavik.
Wow.
I discovered Iceland, and I discovered in this beautiful, 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 phenomenal island that looks nothing like something on Earth, that is out of the imaginary, only has 300,000 people living on it. And they're all Icelanders. White, blue eyes, blonde, etc. So they perfect everything. And everything is Iceland, is not something you've seen in the world. So they do not have fuel generators. Everything comes from down the earth. You will use hot water freshly from down the earth.
They have volcanoes there, right?
Volcanoes. Yeah. Electricity comes from down below. You can just dig in 10 centimeters and boil an egg. And fry an egg immediately. It's that true. So you think these come from movies, but they're not. And when it comes to restaurant, very expensive, but very high end.
Yeah.
Produce and quality. They're not all Michelin starred, but when you sit, you enjoy the salmon you've never tasted, the fish you've never tasted.
Clean waters.
You can't imagine.
Yeah.
So it's Iceland is that little island in the middle of nowhere, 3.5 hours from London, 3.5 hours from New York. And they live on their own. The most beautiful scenery in summer, the most amazing scenery or experience in winter. And whenever you sit at a hotel, it's just perfection of food and chimneys, etc.
Yeah.
Wine and all the experiences. And whenever you sit at a restaurant, it's beyond. They do not have the choices. Again, it's a hidden island somewhere in the middle of the sea. They do not have the choices. Do not expect to have that lots of restaurant. But 3-day culinary experience will transport you in a different world.
Is it true that Iceland is green and Greenland is covered with ice?
Yes.
It is true, huh?
It's true.
I have to go.
It is true.
You know, going back to Australia, when I went, my friend who took me there is Greek. So I got to find out that the second biggest Greek community outside Athens is in the Melbourne area.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Incredible. I had some of the best Greek food I've ever had there. Some of the best Italian food I ever had.
I confirm.
Between Melbourne and Sydney, there was a very really good restaurant in Sydney also. Some of the best oysters, Sydney Rock oysters. They have a very rich wine culture there. They make some of the best wines. So I can totally, I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you that I've met two of the, in the top 10 list of best pizzaiolos in the world, two of them, which I met and there are others, are in Australia.
Are they Italian originally?
Yes.
Yes.
And they decided to move.
Yeah.
So the pizza is wow.
Yeah.
Again, great ingredients, great water. Wine is outstanding. Meat quality, you would say, okay, I would eat Australian beef in Dubai.
Yeah.
But it has traveled.
Sure.
It has traveled for 15 hours.
Sure.
It has passed through different fridges.
Yeah.
The meat fresh is beyond imaginable.
Yeah.
Salmon is whoa. Oysters are...
It's like in Japan. The ultra high end and the best produce is not exported. It's consumed locally.
Mm-hmm.
You have to assume that's going to be, that's the case everywhere with everything. You know, Australia is going to be the same. I want to tell you about another region, San Sebastian, the Basque region, northeast Spain, bordering with France, the Basque. Okay. Somehow they have some of the best food you'll ever have. Have you been?
No.
What's their secret again? Okay, it's location.
Yeah.
It's on the Atlantic. Clean, cold water. It's got very fertile land. So produce, incredible produce. And access to some of the best cattle in the world. The Spanish breeds of cattle. The food there, you'll go, you'll be surprised. It's very simple. Every restaurant is based around the grill. The most famous company that makes grills is called Jasper. Most people don't know that it's a Spanish company. So you go and there's that Jasper oven. You go, sometimes you're walking into the restaurant, you see the grill outside and it's all, they've mastered the grill, heat, raising and lowering. You'll have some of the most incredible steaks, fish, turbo, all kinds of shellfish, sandwiches. Somehow that region, it's number two for me after Japan.
So let's explain a little bit about the Jasper. Jasper is a Spanish creation that has the and first time probably where they created a smoker slash grill slash oven with charcoal inside, and you can close it and open it from smoking to heating or grilling, I would say.
Yeah.
It's the invention of putting charcoal inside your kitchen.
Yes.
And it was world rock and roll.
Yes.
It gives a different flavor to the meat.
Yeah.
Made famous by La Petite Maison.
Ah.
Made famous by La Petite Maison in 2011,
Nice.
12.
In La Petite Maison in Nice, the
original La Petite Maison, La Petite Maison in Nice, which I visited, has nothing to do with La Petite Maison.
Yeah, I know.
The zero.
La Petite Maison and LPM are two different things.
Exactly. So the LPM creation started around simplicity of food and the Jasper oven.
Okay.
And back then it was the Jasper oven that people started seeing, what is that? What is this? And then it grew all around the world.
So they asked Anthony Bourdain about what your last meal would be. And he said a meal at Echebarri. Echebarri is a restaurant in the Basque region. It's outside San Sebastian. It's about 40 minutes away. I was fortunate enough to be able to eat there once. And it's all about that Jasper grill and the ingredients. And you'll have one of the best meals you'll ever have. But there's no sauces on the meat.
Simple.
Actually, it's just got a little bit of salt on top. Simple, sliced like that. I got to go into the kitchen. I met the man.
That's nice.
His name is Vitor. I think it's Victor, but with the Spanish thing, they call him Vitor.
Okay.
And the man has mastered this grill, and he does it himself. They do the prawns, the Palamos prawns, and the pink prawns, and they'll do the steaks, and a great fish.
Very nice. So back to our food destinations. There's something we need to discuss, and that plays a great value. So I'm not going to say anything negative, but Paris is a food destination, definitely.
Yes.
But there is that something I will tell you about. And New York is a food destination, and there is that something. So there is the culture. So Paris, in a small city where everything's small, plates are small, homes are small, roads are small, everything's small, it lacks generosity in the food. So that food destination, you won't enjoy the American the way Americans do it. You won't enjoy Lebanese the way Lebanese do it. So you would go to a Lebanese restaurant, and hummus is this way. Mm-hmm. And probably on a big mesa table, you would have three plates because everything's expensive, everything's in euro, and the mindset is not generous. I'll allow myself to say that, even though probably some French
prepare for hate mail.
Exactly. Go back to the Americans. Americans in their culture have big roads, yes. Big homes, big plates, big ketchup, big cereals, big everything. So food is generous. Big chunk of meat, 1 kilo tomahawk, etc., etc. So it becomes a food destination with different mindset. Go to any Italian restaurant. The Italian, the American Italians who have been there for 100 years. The pasta plate is that big.
Mm.
And take that same plate and go to France. That would be just tasting pasta with a small little thing, even though Italy is just a neighbor. So a food destination has a lot of role to play depending on which country it's part of and who are the people. So we can fast forward. I would say New York is one of my favorite. I love LA. Been fan of Paris less lately. And then comes Sydney, definitely Melbourne all the way. And then comes Dubai. So in that Dubai where you're building up the culture from scratch, and it is based on the culture of Arabs, which are generous. Ahla wa sahla feek, tfaddal. My home is your home. I'll sleep outside, you'll sleep inside. Coffee to start and coffee at the end. Whatever is mine is yours. And lots of things that the Arab culture plays a big role with food. And that food becomes more generous, that food becomes tasty in a way or another, portion become bigger, mm-hmm. Etc. So food destination and location, what do you think?
I think, it's a like you said, it's a combination of the two, Going to Paris has great cuisines that are from Francophone countries. Like you'll have great Vietnamese food, you'll have great Moroccan food. So I know exactly kind of like what you mean by that. It's really, really interesting. But Paris is a very special, unique place.
So you told me before about your favorite food destination. We talked about that. Now it's time to tell me about your least favorite food destination or city.
Okay. So I once mentioned that I never had a incredible, memorable meal in Holland, in Amsterdam, even though one of my best friends is from there. I've come to learn that they do have a culinary scene, but can you tell me a famous Dutch dish or anything? Not really. It's a destination that's not known for food. I don't like sweet food, me personally. I prefer savory. So any cuisine that has a lot of sweet things in it, I won't like it. But I'm a foodie, right? So I'll go and I'll find the good in everything. In every city, I'll find something that's good. Okay. It's a hard question to answer, my least favorite culinary. I just don't go there. My whole life revolves around food. So I'm going to go where the food is good.
What do you think of
food? Do you have a least favorite?
I do have. I was thinking while you're talking if I should say it or not. I've had, unfortunately, bad experiences in Algeria.
Okay.
But that's probably 8-10 years back.
Okay.
And I'm not a big fan of the non-street food part of Egypt.
Well, I was about to say Egypt. Okay, I was just talking with somebody. Egypt, look, whether we agree or not agree, it's known that whoever goes there gets sick. You know, does that mean it's not a good culinary destination? You know, a friend of mine just offered me, he's like, come, and I'm going to take you to hidden locations and hidden spots and stuff like that. So I'm going to do it. I've been to Egypt once for a wedding, and I stayed 2 days. I did the wedding, and I went on the horse to see the pyramid, and I got the picture. So I cannot speak from experience. The only Egyptian food I've ever had is I've had lamb chops in Dubai at a place called Damiati, and mlouchia at Hadout al-Masriya.
And that's it.
That's it. That's my experience of
Egyptian food. So all the culinary experiences, I would definitely need to speak about my country, my homeland, Lebanon.
Yeah.
Lebanon is is the two. So Lebanon is the land, the country, the Lebanese food, the cultures, the years and thousands of years of history, decorations or not, more than 400 different plates on one table, so 200 plates of meza and another 200 of home-cooked meals. So how varied and how diverse it is in comparison with other countries. And removing that, the creation of the Lebanese, the intelligent of the Lebanese mindset, the business mindset of the Lebanese man or entrepreneur that has exported lots of concepts all around the Middle East and all around the world. And even without exporting them, we have created great things. So when someone goes to Beirut, Beirut is known, or probably the capital or Lebanon, for the cuisines of the world, being Lebanese chef or being Arab chefs or being local chefs, you would have amazing pasta, memorable pizzas, great meat, French food, etc., etc. You know, I've been around for a long period of time in the States in the last 6 weeks, and believe me, my favorite croissant was made by a Lebanese guy and not by the French and not by anything, because the adaptation was so Americanized that I didn't enjoy it. So I need to focus on Lebanon, and unfortunately today you cannot travel to Lebanon, and lots of nationalities cannot travel to Lebanon. And what's happening to Lebanon is a sad story, but the days will come where Lebanon is not only the land of hummus and it's not only the land of manoush. I want openly and loudly say that in Lebanon you can travel all around the world from a culinary perspective while being in town. We're probably not the best in everything's Asian. I would say Chinese or Indian. We only have one or two Chinese restaurants, one or two Indian restaurants, lots of sushi, but that Californian style sushi. But when it comes to Europe, America, meat and perfection of details,
like I was telling you, you know, GCC citizens have a travel advisory. So we presently can't go to Lebanon. But whenever it is permitted, it's one of the first places I go to. I have a lot of friends there. They've taken me everywhere. I told you about the place that does the little birds, Halim. I've had some of the best Italian food there. I've had incredible steaks. There's a restaurant called Meet the Fish. Mm-hmm. I go there and we have oysters. We have raw carpaccio of seafoods, you know, it's a beautiful concept. You have hospitality is in your blood. It's you can't beat the Lebanese when it comes to hospitality. You can see it. You go to the restaurants all over the world. It's like you're made for it. it's something. It's hard to put your finger on it. And then you'll see a lot of places you go in the world. F&B manager of this hotel, they'll be Lebanese. Or you'll be like served by someone, you're like, oh, no way, you're Lebanese. Because of the political situation and the instability, a lot of Lebanese have left and traveled all over the world. And you gave the example of Sydney, where it has a huge, there are Lebanese everywhere. Some of the best restaurants here are Lebanese, or Lebanese owned or Lebanese managed. Again, there, like you say, there's you see in a Korean market in every corner in Los Angeles, whatever, there are Lebanese people all over the world. I was recently in Montreal. I couldn't believe the Lebanese influence there. Mm-hmm. Then I find out Toronto is also. I assumed it was only Montreal because of the French language, but there's a lot of Lebanese in Toronto also.
So of all the places you visited, in our first episode introduction about yourself, you told me that you lived in certain countries.
Yeah.
So of all the places you visited, please tell me which one are they, and what did you discover in each? How did you tackle food around? And are they food destinations?
Yes. The first one I want to mention is Singapore. I spent 5 years living in Singapore. Food is very important. What I learned there, and it's something you mentioned briefly in our first episode, is the big meal is breakfast. People eat rice and cooked food and curries and, you know, it's you're eating heavy food. So I discovered that, you know, breakfast doesn't have to be eggs or a piece of toast and cheese or whatever. The big meal is breakfast, and you see people eating that. So I discovered that. I discovered that three or four cultures can live side by side, and each one respects the other and loves the other's cuisine. In Singapore, you have Indian, you have Malay, you have Chinese. The Chinese influence in the Far East, a lot of people don't know that Chinese ethnic Chinese people left China, mm-hmm. and they live in Indonesia, they live in Malaysia, they live in Thailand, they live everywhere. So there is a Chinese influence everywhere. Very good Chinese food as a result. That's what I learned about Singapore. Here, I learned about Iranian food, or regional Indian food. I got to go deeper, learning the difference between Northern and Southern Iranian cuisine. In Lebanon, I learned about the respect to produce and seasonality. You know, this is in season. My mom used to tell me, this dish they only eat in winter. Or, you know, living in Dubai, you don't really know that. You don't know that. We have produce year round. So seasonality, that's another thing in Japan. It's all about seasonality. And that needs to be brought back into the culinary world. That, you know, like truffles. I want to have an episode on truffles because it's everywhere now. Whereas when I was younger, it was, you know, people used to eat truffles only from September to January when it was white truffle season. Now it's in potato chips and on burgers. United States, I love, because I love burgers and pizza and American food and pancakes. But then you go to New York and you realize there's incredible high-end Michelin star perfection. Again, people coming from all over the world. Yeah. San Francisco is another great city. Fantastic. Great Chinese food. Great Japanese food. Los Angeles. I've been really fortunate to have lived in all these different countries. I lived in Paris also.
Mm-hmm.
I got to discover a lot about Paris. So it was a nice
nice tour around.
Yeah.
Do you feel a difference between the food in depending on the country? So if you have a hummus in Lebanon and then you have it in 10 different countries, do you think you can replicate the same food in every country with its origin? Can you have an amazing Italian pizza out of Italy? Do you believe in that?
I don't think you can generalize. I think it's per dish, you know. I haven't had hummus as good as the one I've had in Lebanon, outside Lebanon. But that doesn't mean I haven't had very good hummus. Pizza, we talked about it earlier off camera. Some of the best pizza I've ever had in my life was in Japan. So the broad answer is, I think it can be replicated, assuming you have access to the ingredients and the technique. And the love. You said the nafas?
Yeah.
Yeah. I made a list. I have this habit of making lists.
Mm-hmm.
I made a list of restaurants that you can taste and or see the love in the food.
Okay.
And I make these lists all the time. So there's a whole bunch of them in Dubai, by the way.
Giving my personal opinion about touring around, I'll give you a small example that happened with me. When I first traveled to London, I didn't like it at all. I didn't understand it at all, and I thought I'm going to have English food. So I started eating bone marrow and beans in the morning. And okay, first day, second day, and then what? What do English eat? What do British eat? Because I was searching for the wrong things at the wrong place. So on my second and third and fourth trip, I started digging into probably the trends. I went on list, as you said, and searched for the best fish and chips. Ended up doing 10. And then searched for the best cookie. Ended up doing 10. So I understood what you need to search for.
Yes.
And instead of focusing on one thing and one item and having a mindset of just all the way, how do English eat or British eat, I went to discovering what makes it unique. And when you see that Heathrow is one of the busiest airports in the world, that means something in a way or another. So whoever comes into Heathrow would come in and eat. So I discovered several other cuisines. And here was the astonishment of, yes, I want to go back to London.
Yeah.
I enjoyed London. And yes, this is a food destination. It's not the greatest food destination of all. And it's not a secret that Englishmen themselves do not eat well or do not have that great culinary variety, even though they have conquered the world. This is bizarre.
They have conquered the world.
They didn't take anything back home with them. But anyway, it has become the heart of the action. Yeah. So going around, whenever I travel to the States, some cities are good, some cities are less. We forgot to talk about Chicago that has great food. New York has amazing food. I was positively astonished by Houston and what they eat. And at the end of 6 weeks last summer in the States, I was back on the plane. I said, you know what? This is what I discovered this time. If you go to Texas, it was the first time I knew what Tex-Mex means. So I always thought Tex-Mex is a modernization of Mexican, but it's Texan Mexican food. So
absolutely,
it was created by Texas. Yeah. And in Texas, you would eat a lot of croque monsieur, old restaurants. You would eat a lot of croque madame, old restaurants. You would eat lots of croissant, old restaurants. And there is an inspiration. So at first, I thought, okay, why do restaurants copy each other? And this is how it is. So it depends on it depended on who came in, how much the influence of the international society, and probably the French army back then that were in Louisiana just next door. So if you go take California or take Texas or take New York or take anywhere else, you would just feel a certain overflow of the same culture or mindset. So let's say someone starts in Dubai doing the Dubai chocolate. So everyone wants to do the Dubai chocolate. If one of the sheikhs would love to eat or have coffee with honey, so everybody will follow in a way or another. So this is not only in the Arab world. And on the international scene, which I felt lately in Dubai, one starts, the other copy, and it goes on and on and on. I've never had croque monsieur as much as I had in Houston. It's okay, why?
That's incredible.
It's everywhere.
I need to go there.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Did you try all the barbecue and all that stuff?
Oh my God. So I went to the barbecue places.
Yeah.
Google Maps take me to the best five. So I've been to the best five. Some are overrated, some are better. And this is exactly what I said. I'm coming here for the meat. I'm not coming here for the fat. Mm. I'm not coming here for the barbecue sauce. So whatever is famous, and the most famous one, you eat buttery meat, too sweet, lots of spices, lots of barbecue. And the least favorite of the top five, which for me was the top one, is meat, well textured, good flavor. Teeth would go in.
USDA Prime, at the end of the day, is very good.
100%. We're going to talk about meat and the difference between American and Australian on our next episode. You have 30 seconds because 38 minutes.
I want to say, the last thing I want to say, the best fish and chips I ever had was in Sydney at a place called Doyle's on the Rocks.
Okay.
And it was beer battered John Dory.
Oh, amazing.
Shout out to Australia.
I'm a big fan of fish and chips. Yeah. And a big shout out to my friend Claude, whom I took to 15 fish and chips on my last trip to Australia. And at the end, he said, enough. Done. I'm not having fish and chips anymore.
Take me with you next time.
Oh my God. We hope you enjoyed the show. Yes, food destinations, 38 minutes. Wow, we talk so fast and so much. We're going to meet in our next episode to discuss more values about food, who we are, what we do, and the untold things. Remember, it's food. Unscripted, nothing's prepared, ever, the way it is.
Follow us on Instagram and subscribe to No Garlic, No Onions YouTube channel.
You're the best. Bedouin Foodie on Instagram.